Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Great to be with you on another week, the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco. I'm Aaron Noonan. Great to have you along for the ride this week as we dive into another chat with another interesting name and face from the world of Australian motorsport. Now, my guest on the pod this week is the team principal at Walkinshaw Andretti United. Bruce Stewart's been around the sport for a long time now, and for a guy who was outside motorsport, he sure has become something of a guy in motorsport. He's the man on the ground here in Melbourne leading Walkinshaw Andretti United. On behalf of Ryan Walkinshaw, Michael Andretti and Zach Brown and Richard Dean from United, he's in a really interesting role, and it was a really interesting chance to sit down and have a catch up with him, particularly in the wake of the team's recent news of their move to Ford next year. We talk about how they're going to farewell their Holden legacy and period at the end of this year's championship at the Adelaide 500. What the feedback's been like from the fans and from the industry relating to their big announcement from May when they announced that they would go to Ford Mustangs for 2023. We talk a bit about Bruce's background. We talk about where he came from before he came to motorsport and some of the mistakes maybe that the Walkinshaw Holden Racing Team operation made along the way, including trying to be a little bit too much like Triple Eight. They've certainly been a team that's been on the rise in recent times, not quite consistent at the point to be full-time championship challengers, but with the Bathurst 1000 win last year and Chas Mostert being very competitive, it is a team that has got a very strong supporter base. I think you'll enjoy this chat. Enjoy this sit-down. Buckle up, sit back, relax. Bruce Stewart on the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco. Bruce Stewart, thank you for having me at Walkinshaw. Well, it's not really Walkinshaw Andretti United, is it? We're at Walkinshaw, aren't we?
Yeah,
this is the big kahuna head.
This is the group, you know, like this is Ryan's house.
Mm.
So, yeah, this is where it all happens road car-wise. We're about to move property and go into a new facility, which we want to try and compete with how this one sits. This is bloody impressive.
It's awesome. It's huge.
Yeah.
Because this is Walkinshaw Automotive Group. This is all the road car stuff that has been for all sorts of manufacturers and remanufacturing. The race team doesn't live where we are right now.
We were going to. We were going to. But it expanded so quickly. And the number of cars they're putting through that, you know, I think ATB was MD and they said to him, actually, no, you got to stay where you are. So we've been in the same place for almost 30 years. Man, it kind of feels that way too. So we're moving joint, which is great, will give us a whole impetus for the staff and the sponsors and, you know, just brings everyone into the one place as well.
Mm. Clayton Business Park's been the home of HRT, Walkinshaw's, and then all the offshoot stuff, the Kmart team and HSV dealer team, the Young Lions. Yeah, it's kind of the ending of a chapter this year with that stuff because that's been, you know, we talk about your team, it's the team from Clayton, it's Clayton, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know what, you're still
going to be in Clayton. You're not leaving the postcode.
We're staying in the same business park. We're just moving to a much better building, a much bigger building, and, it'll be much more obvious from the front of the business park. It's kind of bloody hell. It's been a long time coming, but wrapped, it's going to happen.
Mm. And it comes at a time when I guess it's good timing, new era for you in supercars next year with the Ford stuff coming along, which that caught a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah.
Now that the buzz has sort of slowed down and it's sort of, you know, okay, people have started to get their head around it. Have you been surprised at the reaction? Now that you've seen and felt and heard a little bit, you've been to some races, you've seen socials, you've clearly heard from your fan base, the wider fan base. What's your feeling on it all now, the reaction?
I think people have been pretty rational. Like, I think they've been a lot more rational than I thought.
I expected a real wild.
Oh, I thought we were going to get walloped. And because it's a big move. It's a big change for the traditional Team Red to do this. But, you know, through all the rationale and when you kept discussing it, you know, one of those things that kept nagging you was, wow, how are the fans going to go with this? But I think, and pats on the back to our PR, you know, lead, Andrew Wiles, we've just really open booked it and said, well, these are the reasons why. We're a team that wants to keep going and keep growing and be the best we can be and resurrect the days of old and, you know, be the champion team again. This is the best path forward. We know it hurts. I think even Ryan said it, it's kind of weird for him still to get his head around it that, you know, we're leaving the red to go to the blue side. But in Ford, we've got a partner, people and a group of individuals and a company that's right behind us that is saying, we believe what you want to do and where your goals are and your expectations, let's make it happen. And that's super invigorating. Bloody hell. It's great to be feel that momentum behind you.
So there was no chance of staying, like becoming a Camaro team next year, just wasn't an option?
No, definitely we investigated and pushed and prodded hard in that direction. But, you know, for whatever reason, they the deal couldn't come together and you know, I can only talk from our point of view. Mm. We had a very motivated partner in Ford wanting to partner with us. So that momentum meant that, you know, we had to go that way. Mm. And, you know, we understand the fan vitriol and, you know, the – you know, we all bleed red. We all love our history. You know, I remember when I first started with the team working for HRT.
Huge.
Huge.
Big
like,
biscuits.
That's just like, you know, I worked for the Holden Racing Team. That was just such a badge of honour and still is, you know, but that team no longer exists in that same format.
Mm.
That team is no longer gone and the factory support hasn't been there since 2016. And unfortunately, our team has been mediocre and average for a long time. Mm. And so you either go, do we want to keep going like that? Do we want to, you know, keep trying to eke, a, you know, a few points here and a few 1% is here to try and catch the leaders, or do we really want to have a crack? And we've got some really amazing leaders in our place. And I don't want to, you know, sound like a cliche, but people have been around the team for a long time. There's
plenty of familiar faces there. That you know, they were there. You know, Robbie Starr's the one who's been there the longest.
Robbie,
since 1991.
I know.
I was 10.
Yeah, yeah. He, you know, he's. It's like he's. He should have a bloody statue. But
well, you're going to a new place. Maybe you can pop a Rob Starr star. You
know, Rob, hold back if you're listening to this. But the other thing is, you know, like you got Macca and you got Burnsy and you
Anthony McDonald.
Yes, yeah. Justin Burns.
Son of the great bloody engine builder Neil Burns.
Yeah.
With the team years ago and dealer team before that. So, ties are there. The ties are there.
Exactly. And all of these people, if you look them in the eye, and we're all getting a little bit older, is like, you know what, do we want to keep going around and at one stage in your life at the end say, that's it, well, that was my career in supercars, was sort of mid-rung, won a couple of Bathursts, or do you want to have a crack?
You went to say the inside line F then, didn't
you?
Yeah,
I did.
We're going to talk about that later.
I did. And, absolutely. But do you want to have a crack? Do we really want to make a difference for us, for our families, for our fans, for our sponsors? And that's kind of invigorating because when you look at it and you go, you know what, I'm not over and done. I'm not happy with mediocre. We've got to do what we can to resurrect this great team back to the top. And it's a long journey because those top couple of teams are doing a fantastic job. And so we can't kid ourselves that it's easy, but we've got to make moves and decisions that help us get there. Otherwise, we are just going to be middle of the rung or, you know, win a couple of big races.
Living off past glories.
Yeah, bugger that.
Mm.
Bugger that, Noons. Mm. Like, seriously, you make hard decisions and sometimes those decisions hurt and, you know, you have that red army that, you know, people at every racetrack bail me up and go, what's going on? What's happened here? You know, and you chat to them rationally about, we love our history. We love Team Red. We love HRT.
Oh, I walked in here today at the Welcome Shore Group and obviously there's, you know, plenty of HSV road cars. I'm looking straight out here at a commonly known as a Welcome Shore, but the Group ASV Commodore of 88. There's the last Garth Tander, Warren Luff, Sandown winning 2016 car that's back in its VF HRT livery just as you walk in the door here. There's a bunch of other different models and eras of HSVs. Your history is so strong and the passion is so strong through all that.
Yeah, and the racing DNA has been linked with the road car for so long. But, you know, you're right, the history and the illustrious and the wins and the victories, we've got to take this team back there. Otherwise, we're kidding ourselves. And so you make some decisions that hurt a bit, but there's real hope and there's real enthusiasm that we can make a difference with this new alignment. And the people at Ford again have been fantastic in saying we're right behind you. And that is amazing to have that tailwind. So let's see what we can do.
The thing that really sticks in my brain from when the HRT banner was moved to 888,
yeah,
your fan, see, it's a really unique situation where the brand is the team and the team is the brand. Whereas other teams, you know, 888 are a good example.
Yeah.
They've been Team Better Electrical, they've been Team Vodafone, they've been Red Bull Racing and various iterations of that name. But at their core, they're 888 under a couple of different banners over the journey.
Yeah.
You guys were the banner and the team all wrapped together. So when the banner, it wasn't like you just pulled the banner off the top of the shelf of the team. It's integrated into the whole thing of mixture of how it works. So your fans that followed your team, nearly to a man and woman,
yeah,
said, we're not going there. We're, yeah, not following that banner because that's not us. This is our team.
Yeah.
The Walkinshaw, of what it became, Mobile One HSV Racing initially and now WAU, they stuck fat.
Yeah.
That, how do you reckon they're going to go now? Because this is different. This, yes, is, okay, we're stuck fat with you on that change. We get it. Okay. Now you're jumping the fence. Although the red side's not there anymore, there's, yeah, a sister of the red side there.
Yeah.
But do you reckon you're going to lose some people here? But this reminds me a bit of Brock and Lowndes. Brock told Lowndes going to Ford, you're going to lose half your fan base, but you'll win half the fan base off the other side. Do you reckon there's a bit of that in this?
Yeah, there is. But equally, we'd love our fans to come with us. Importantly, the fans who know us, we're still the same people. We're still the same ethos. We still have the same characters and personalities behind it. We're doing what we can to bring glory and triumph and celebration back to our team. And so a lot of those people who, you know, on social media, you know, really had a really good crack, and you understand.
What a shock. Social media having a crack. Holy hell.
It was a bit of passion. But equally, a lot of those people, when you speak to them rationally, they're coming around. Now, we know not everyone will come, and we thank them for coming on the journey and being with us thus far, and we understand not everyone will come, but we hope a lot of them will, because we're not doing this for something as little as money or commercial. We're doing it because we're talking about a factory alignment that will give us much more than just a commercial backing.
It's like it's not a quick sugar hit.
No, it's not. It's not. And it will give us, you know, I guess foundations to try and get this team back to the top. And that's what we want. Succinctly, if I distill it, Ryan Walkinshaw, Michael Andretti and Zach Brown don't task me with making a profit or winning a couple of trophies with this team. They have one goal, constantly improve our team and take it back to the top. They're not interested in being mid-rung in the supercars paddock and coming along for a couple of events during the year. Not interested. What they want is to have an elite racing operation in supercars and take this once great team back to the top. So when you have such a single-minded motivation like that, it helps make some decisions that are initially hard to swallow, but hopefully people can understand.
It reminds me a lot, actually, of knowing you. In our supercar world, we all have relationships, but I think we make them stronger through our other interests.
Yes.
A lot of us follow AFL football.
Yeah.
Who do you support?
The Demons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at the Demons.
Yeah, totally.
Right now, reigning premiers, going for it again this year, had a couple of injuries, but they're up in the top. You've got to be in the top four to get there in September. Rewind a few years. Yeah, and their glory had been, you know, 60s. You know, and, you know, we're talking HRT glory, 90s, noughties.
Yeah.
So even further back, basket case, but hard decisions, learnt lessons, went to the, you know, I can see similarities of it looked like those things, they're never going to get there.
Yeah.
And bang. Last year they looked like they could beat any team by 100 points.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how it, and look, it's, they're different sports, but I see that there's a little bit of similarity there.
Absolutely. And if you keep doing the same thing, you know, it is a definition of insanity because you're just going to get the same results. Mm. And so those decisions that they made, and they were brave. You got to be a bit brave but courageous and make some calls that are a little bit hard to swallow but are for the right reasons. That's what we're doing. We're improving our business and we're giving ourselves the every opportunity to take this team back to the top.
So the four things, the obvious thing that the fans would link as what you're saying are the big calls. But what have been the other big calls along the way in the last year, two or three to do this? And clearly you've got more to come.
Absolutely. You know, I think bringing Chaz to our team was a big, big part of that, and that was the initial catalyst. He's the Pied Piper, like amazing, amazing person, off track, super talented on track, but also he fits in very well with our culture. In regard to our culture, we have a lot of leaders in our team. I think we run a little bit differently from most other teams insofar as I'm not an engineer or a mechanic. Means I'm pretty sure you're aware of that. So, and in that respect, you have to have strong people in those roles. You know, Carl Foe, Anthony McDonald, you have Andrew Wiles on the commercial side. You know, you've got Darren Tate in production. You've got really experienced, strong people in those roles because they've got to stand up and they have to make the calls. I see my role as principal as just being, I facilitate them with funding, people or resource, and try and help them with structure or any other means to help them take us forwards and trust them. Mm. Get out of the way. So, you know, because race teams often run with a really autocratic one person at the top. Now, I'm pretty sure that if I was telling Carl which springs to use, you know, and, you know, roll centres and stuff, you know, that his eyes would glaze over. He might even have a tear. So, you know, I got to trust in our people and give them that. So I think in the methodology that we run and the culture that we're trying to grow in our business has been really different. And in the past, when I was at HRT at different times, it could be a little bit of a difficult environment to be in because I think unashamedly it was trying to be a lot like Triple Eight with a really strong leader at the top who would point and tell everyone what to do and everyone got in line. I think we tried to be a little bit like them for a long time and we didn't do very well at it. We got to be ourselves. And if you look at our owners, who they are, and particularly Walkinshaw's and Ryan, we have personality, we have character, we embrace, you know, difference between our people. We allow people like Chaz to turn up with crazy hair at different events. You know, we really celebrate hard. We have a really awesome, you know, we celebrate our wins culture. And it's hopefully a culture that will be different from the other teams. That
it's a really interesting point you raise about looking at the other mob in Queensland at Banyo and trying to be like them.
Oh, mate.
What period were you doing that?
I think
you look back on it.
I think, you know, early in the 11, 12, 13, 14.
When they swapped to Holden.
Yeah, exactly. When they came across and, you know, we were constantly being compared to them, I think it often at different times became quite a hard place because we were trying to out-elite them, outdo them at a military precision exercise, whereas we certainly have structures and processes, but we weren't being ourselves, you know, like we're a very different group of people than them, and I back our people, you know.
To do it their way.
Yeah, to do it their way, to do, you know, because if you're constantly trying to emulate another group, you're just playing second fiddle. So I think we have elements in the way we operate that are hopefully give us an advantage on them when we can get our car up to spec.
Uniquely, you've got three owners, none of which are full-time here. Ryan's the closest, he comes and goes. Zach, obviously, in the UK, in a bit of America with all of his McLaren stuff, Michael in the States. And you're not, as you said before, you're a commercial team principal, which makes you very different to pretty much every other team principal in the lane at the moment and in the last X years. Traditionally, they're motorsporty people from a mechanical engineering-y side of things. So when you're talking about doing it differently, they're the bits that I look at and go, "That there's no comparison in the pit lane. To anyone who's a little bit like that, half like that, slightly like that, it's totally unique. Would having one of those owners be full-time here be of a massive assistance to you?
I think, to be frank, we have so much communication with them that, you know, every night I have communication, you know, often with Ryan and Zach on one side of the world, and every morning I'll be talking
when
with
Mike. When the clock goes around the
other way,
yeah.
It's always on their terms though. How does that work? Anyway, no, but yeah, I don't think it really makes a difference. The world is very close with email, WhatsApp, phone calls, you know,
Zoom.
Yeah. So we, you know, we utilize that resource really well.
One of the things that springs into my mind, obviously, the Ford thing, there was a lot written about externally about you guys on the hunt for another manufacturer over the journey for the last couple of years. I think Ryan's expressed that there was one really quite close and then COVID all you know, changed the world, changed that, changed everything. I'm really interested in your take on this. Is the fact that you've ended up with the other mob in the existing championship, not with someone else new or someone old coming back or anything like that, is that a reflection more on just what happened with the world, where the category's at and how it's viewed in the motoring industry, how you're viewed among the motoring industry? Which of those things is probably the standout definition of that? And I know that's a there's probably a few things that are difficult to answer in that, but I'm really interested in it.
I think there are manufacturers keen to come in. To be quite frank, the people at Ford have the same alignment and vision. And once we started talking to them, you're like, wow. Wow.
It would have been hard to have anyone out there to beat that.
Yeah, yeah. And equally, they believe in us and everything they're saying makes sense of what we're trying to do. You find out how aligned you are. And that was a really watershed moment for, you know, the particularly Ryan and myself when we were going through the process. You were like, bloody hell, there's a lot to be said.
It's like
this,
a nice surprise.
It's a nice surprise, really nice surprise. I think there are the automotive businesses that will come into supercars down the track. I have no doubt of that. And I'm rapt we are where we are. So for the end of, you know, the car of the future, we'll be seeing Holden out and we're proudly going to go into a Ford Mustang for Gen 3. And we know what we expect from the Ford people and we know what they expect from us. So
it's really interesting that it's just worked out that your last run in a Commodore is going to be at a marquee return of an old favourite, the Adelaide 500.
Yeah.
Of course, Adelaide's history with GM, Holden, the plant there, Holden, you know, has dominated that event when you calculate it over the journey and your team's been one of those. Have you got something special in mind? I don't expect you to give it away, but have you got anything cooking with liveries or programs or things that are going to happen around that to sort of send this out the right way?
Absolutely. We're going through the process and planning right now. We want to see Holden out properly. Again, just to reiterate, super proud. We celebrate our history. You know, we were the Holden racing team. So we'll see it out properly at Adelaide. Looking forward to it.
All right, we'll keep an eye on
what
you've got cooking.
Cool.
Now let's talk the Brucey Stewart story.
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
Where'd you come from? Like early racing exposure or was motor racing something that came to you later when you got involved in it professionally?
I'm a New Zealander.
I wasn't going to go tell everyone that. You were hiding it really well.
Just get it out now. Get
it
out now.
Tell the world. Exactly. Admit it now.
Yeah, but once you can all get past that and been over here since 1990. And liked motor racing from a distance. To be quite frank, my wife was in mother's group with Tony Scaife and got to know Mark and Tony. And I was in sport. I was in AFL. Horse racing, and then got offered the opportunity to look at the role at Walkinshaw Racing and the Holden Racing Team, and you've got to look at that.
Mm.
And came across and I thought, you know what, I'll do this for 3 or 4 years. I'll be a commercial manager here and then I'll go back into AFL and do something there and see where I can go there. And, man, this thing is just so addictive. This thing is just like once you got it, you can't let go of it.
It's
like,
an addiction. Once it gets in,
it is.
It's amazing to see people who've come from, you know, you didn't follow it growing up. You didn't go anything over the fence at Pukeko as a kid.
No,
you didn't really watch it on telly. You just knew of it.
Yeah.
But once you're in, I've seen this before. You're in.
It's a drug.
It's a good drug though.
Oh, it's a ripper. And so once you're in it, you're like, wow, this is fantastic. The moment that came to me when I left the team for 6 to 12 months, I said, I can't keep giving away these weekends, got a young family. And I went into a role in sport government type stuff, really sort of 8:30 to 5 sharp type stuff, and it wasn't really fulfilling for me. And had a holiday and I went away and it was near the beach, and my wife and the kids walked down to the beach at about 9:30, and it was Bathurst weekend Friday. And I said, tell you what, Lisa, I'll see you at the beach. I'll just watch a little bit of Crompton and all the people here and on TV, and I'll be down shortly. Well, they walked back in at 4:30.
You were still there.
And my wife's like, you've got to get back into this, don't you? And I said, yeah, I miss it. I really, really miss it. Like, it's in the blood. Great. So, yeah, that was the moment you go, you know what, I really want to come back.
So did you come here to play cricket? Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a naturally looking cricketer. Probably clearly a mid, sort of midfield batting, sort of, you know, one of those Mike Gatting type, Alan Lamb, chubby checker, sort of, you know, mid order batter. But yeah, I came over to play cricket. Played very badly at the Melbourne Cricket Club, really badly. But I got to know a lot of really good people, including Brad Hodge, who's in a bit of the telecast. And, it was really good. I love cricket, but just didn't have the talent.
Oh, I love lots of things, and I didn't have the talent to even get to that point. So you're well in front of plenty of people here. So you had some time at Melbourne Footy Club?
Yes.
So hence why were you ingrained into you, and so that's why you're a Melbourne supporter now as well? Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, right? So in New Zealand, if you play rugby for a club and you play cricket for that club, like you don't, you know, go for one club in winter sport and you go to another club in summer sport. So when I was playing cricket for the Melbourne Cricket Club, and then I decided to stay, you know, for winter, and like, well, let's go and watch the Melbourne Demons, you know, and they're like, I follow Essendon. No, I follow Hawthorn. You know, I'm like, well, you can't play cricket for Melbourne and follow Essendon, Hawthorn or St Kilda in winter. But that's what it is. I'm like, bugger, I'm sticking with the one club. And, man, that was a bad choice. Cause from 1990 to 2021, some scarce, terrible years, some severally large thrashings. But anyway, paid off last year.
Got there in the end. That one.
Yeah.
And the way it was won made it all.
Yeah,
well,
dead.
Surely.
Dead.
Surely.
Getting emotional.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was, you know, as a sports enthusiast, I know a lot of our listeners who love their supercars and their motorsport are football followers of both any code, any round ball, over ball, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But that as a sporting story was a stunning. I remember sitting there watching it. And when you're a neutral like me, I'm a Hawthorn supporter.
Yeah.
You're like, I just want to see a good game. And it was a ripping game till about half time. The Dogs in front. It's all. Then your blokes just, I don't know what they did. They just went fast forward.
Yeah.
74 points.
I know.
What?
Yeah. I mean, Bontempelli, when he kicked a goal in the third quarter, and I stood up and I was like, this is it. We're gone. It's, I think we were 11 points down or 17 points down. Thought we're toast here. And then just to see bang, 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 bang. Amazing.
Insane.
Yeah, it was great.
Am I right in my research in that you spent some time dealing in beef jerky?
Yeah, okay. Maybe I left that out of my resume when we were talking before. Yes, I did. That's who the hell gave you that? Yes, I did. Yeah, I was the meat snacks expert for Australia. I spent 3 years there after I did my marketing sort of post-grad stuff, and that was pretty cool. You got to see the other side. To be honest, it has helped me with a lot of what you do in the sponsorship land in regard to understanding how FMCG companies want to create value from partnerships. So I won't bore you too much, but yes, I was the meat snacks expert. And I could still talk you through it as well.
We might do a second part of the podcast for that one for our listening audience who go, oh, beef jerky is not really my thing. As an outsider, what did you find strange about how motorsport works? And perhaps you still find it strange compared to footy and all the other places that you've been, because we're a weird, unique creature, Australian motorsport.
It
it's, in a way, sometimes I describe it to some people as we're actually not sometimes part of the Australian sporting fabric, although for certain times of the year, October, we very much are. Not, you know, we're not in the paper every day. We don't have a game every week. We don't have 16 different clubs and 42 players on a list and so much to draw from.
Yeah.
It's like we're a private circus that goes around 12 or 13 times a year pitching our tent to turn it on for the various parts of the country.
Right.
So it's this whole different vibe.
Yeah.
What have you always found unique and strange maybe about motorsport then and perhaps still now?
Well, one key thing is I can see in footy players versus carters who turn into motorsport and supercar drivers. Footy players can kick the pigskin and be whoever they want to be, but if you're a good player and you get the pill 30 times and you're a good kick on both feet, you could be anything.
We can overlook any weird haircuts and
yes.
misbehaviours and other stuff.
Correct.
Yep.
Whereas in motorsport, there's an amazing inbuilt respect for what it takes to get there. Because by the time you get to supercars, you've gone through a level two program, whether you've gone through a Carrera Cup or a Super 2, but also you've come through karting, and mum and dad have had to spend a lot of money getting you there. And at some stage they've gone, we can't afford this. You need to get some partners in and some sponsors in. And so there's a real respect from supercar drivers about who they are, what they represent, and how they behave. And I think it's amazing because having my time in AFL footy, from the dramas that I experienced there in a 3 or 4 year time with players being quite loose at times, versus how supercar drivers behave, I think, you know, we're very lucky. And motorsport drivers generally have a really good understanding of that, what it's taken to get there. I think, secondly, the fan passion is through the roof. You know, like the loyalty and the fan passion is amazing, and it's an addictive, you know, I really enjoy speaking to the fans, like, because you get all walks of life and, you know, I love that. What, you know, happens with the fans. But the third part is it's super entrepreneurial. So when you come from AFL.
In a good way or a bad way?
Both.
Right.
So when you come from AFL, AFL is really restricted, and there's how your sponsors can activate and bring it to life, and there's certain categories you can't go near, and you can't do this versus the AFL sponsors, et cetera, et cetera. In supercars, it's much more open market, and that creates really volatile but open market kind of trading. And it can be a little bit cutthroat. It can be a lot cutthroat. And sometimes some of the teams behave pretty horrendously with
and we're talking about undercutting other teams
and trying to acquire partners. And what it teaches you, you've got to have a very strong proposition of what you're doing and who you are and what you represent, and partner with sponsors and partners who understand that. So, but I really enjoy the cut and thrust. I really, really do. We genuinely compete on and off track. Like in footy, there's more of a camaraderie of on field we'll compete, but off field, your sponsors are your sponsors. Ours are ours, and, you know, like there's no sort of cut and thrust. Mm. In supercars, it's all on. Like, and if you're a supercars fan, if you ever want to see how it works, if you're walking past the pits, take a walk down one of the trucks and walk past all the prime movers at the other end of those B-doubles that are lined up and see how many people are talking in what they think is some kind of veil of silence, some kind of Maxwell Smart veil of silence, and no one can see them, to other team principals, to drivers, to sponsors. It's extraordinary watching. And often if I'm going somewhere, I'll go down the prime end just because I'm super interested in seeing, oh,
yeah, he's talking to him,
huh? Isn't he that sponsor? Believe me, racing fans, do that because you'll be amazed. I might even be there.
Yeah, I was going to say, say hello to Bruce when you go for a wander down there.
Yeah, wave to me and remind me that there's no veil of silence. it's pretty amazing, but that's exciting. So it's always on, racing's always on, and you get to the end of an event and there is a genuine camaraderie. But it's hard. Like if you're down, other teams will work hard to keep you down.
Mm.
And if you're at the top, they'll chip away and chip away. So it makes it kind of addictive. Like the racing doesn't stop with the sessions.
Mm.
Competition's always there.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's RegoToOil tool. Simply type in your rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
As I'm getting older, I think I'm getting more entranced and intrigued in the business of motorsport.
Yep.
As a younger guy in the media, I was more about the media-y side, which plays its part and plays its role, and whatever I was doing, whether it was TV or print or whatever. But the business really intrigues me now, and sponsors and what they're getting out of it. And obviously we're working with brands in our business and the podcast and the website and all that sort of stuff. What are sponsors looking for now as opposed to 10 or 15 years ago? Because we've had all these other tools arrive that, you know, when you rolled up at Walkinshaw in 2008, digital and social media, what's that? Things have changed so much. So what are they looking for now that they weren't looking for back then, apart from the obvious digital elements?
Yeah, I think it used to be the bigger the sign, the better. And so you're constantly in battles in 2008, a lot more in battles about how big the sign is.
How many eyeballs are seeing it.
Yeah, how many eyeballs.
In the traditional sense of a telecast.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, that was almost 80% of the value, whereas I think the signage is probably 20% of the value now. So it's turned on its head, and it is the digital and the content side is huge. But equally, every partner has their own bespoke objectives of what they want. So we have some partners who have big signs and want big visibility but have less of a program off track. We have some partners who might spend the same amount of money, small signs but big programs off track, experiences, B2B dinners, introductions. So our role is to understand what everyone's in it for and do as good a job as we can to add value in that space. Mm. For instance, we had a dinner in Townsville. We had 28 people at a dinner on Saturday night, and that's huge. But, you know, we plan it with military precision about, you know, these are the four people in our business who are running it, and we talk about who we want to meet who and who which objectives we have.
Because quite often you'll have, in a lot of teams like this, sponsors that, although they're in different signs on the car, different trades, different worlds, can do business together.
Very much so.
Like, you got some examples of how that works in your team, for example?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Morris have been with us for 11 years and are intrinsically linked in the Walkinshaw Automotive Group for one, but equally when SP Tools, when you go on Easy Credit, that's because we introduced Morris to SP and they created a program in that. Mm. So the amount of different business opportunities you can create just helps solidify the investment on a sign. Now, they're going to personal now, so we're going to start pushing the personal side. So we've got a new objective, but it doesn't stop everything else in the B2B introductions. And, you know, every partner from Optus, Mobil One, NTI, you know, and we've just put on a new brand on the car, Velo, on the weekend, all have their objectives of what they're looking to achieve. So there's no cookie cutter, one size fits all packaging. Like we have a really clear distilled view of what they want, and we try and deliver that using the events as the opportunities to bring it to life again.
Mm. What do you need more of as a supercar team to add value, to reach more eyeballs that maybe the new owners need to do, that this new car needs to do? I'm so interested because the what is it, 11, 12 teams, whatever it might be, crucial that they're all healthy, crucial that they're not all being propped up by other businesses within their ownership group and kind of, oh, well, we're losing 2 or 3 million on the supercar team, but it's all right because we're making a pile in this other stuff and it's a bit of fun and all that sort of stuff. I don't think that's a good thing for the majority of pit lane to be in that scenario.
No.
What do you guys need more from this next new era to be able to solidify your base and grow your base to have, you know, more opportunity? Is it – a lot of people say it's simple. Oh, more events, bigger TV money, great. Yeah, but that comes with other payoffs. So then what else do you need?
Absolutely. I think you can increase your eyeballs but still have the same number of events. So free-to-air events is a big one. But two is access to content from events for the teams to share.
So at the moment, is that restricted it from is. Supercars? It's a bit better than it used to be, but it's still a bit restricted.
But if you could create live content or bring content to your digital media during the race of a great pass that Chaz had on Cam Waters, or, you know, bring great moments to it, we're going to help bring fans, but also fans' friends who have been shared to, or they see a like on it, to understand supercars a little bit more and buy into the sport. I think what we've got to do is widen the sport and get not only the avid fans who attend, watch and follow supercars, but the avid fans' friends who are the fringe, who might go to an event once a year, who might see it on the news and be mildly interested at Bathurst. You know, but you need those people to get a greater knowledge, to understand what Shane's about, to understand how Chaz drives, and, you know, and to buy into the, wow, this is pretty cool, because I've caught the bug. You've caught the bug. You've had it for a long time. You know, it's, I want other people to understand it. Because so the more access to that content, I think, would be a great thing, but that depends on a TV rights deal and, you know, a media deal that allows that.
There's a whole pile of elements that need to happen for something like that to happen. Is Ryan Walkinshaw misunderstood? Do people out there have the wrong lens of him?
I'm a massive fan and friend of Ryan, but, you know, the thing that people don't understand about him is he's super intelligent. Like, he is one of the most well-read, insightful, and can talk about any topic.
What's his top five topics that he could cover off at great length? Motorsport, clearly, and automotive.
Motorsport, automotive. Bitcoin, crypto, you know, he's amazing to talk in regard to that. You know, amazing in a science sense. If you talk to him about, you know, space and atoms and everything like that, like, he'll talk to his stuff. And obviously, my eyes mildly glaze over, but he's, you know, like, and one thing, if you're a fan out there, never, never say to Ryan, "I saw a ghost." He's one of them. He's just like, no such thing. Physically cannot exist. There's no, you know, like, so he's like fiercely on that one. And if you talk to him about biorhythms or horoscopes, you know, like, it's offensive to him, which is very funny. So, yeah, I encourage fans to introduce themselves to Ryan and say what star sign they are. "Hi, my name's Michael. I'm a Virgo." Because he will hate that. He will hate that. Yeah, so he's very, very, very good in that space. He's a very funny man, very, very witty. So he doesn't like really talking about soccer. He's, you know, like, he's pretty passionate about the sports he loves.
He's a rugby man.
He's a rugby
man. Gloucester.
He is, yeah.
You know, has he adopted an AFL team? I never asked.
Yeah, he kind of has adopted the Cats.
Oh, well, because they were winning.
Yeah, yeah,
and because they're now sponsored by Ford. They're sponsored by Ford. There's an
He adopted the Cats because of the team at Morris, took them down there one time, and, you know, they're a very successful team. So I cynically, you know, unless you've struggled in following your team, I can't really support that. Yeah, and animals, he's amazing as well. Like, he loves cats especially. Like,
well, there you go. There's the Geelong thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Problem solved.
Exactly. There's so many other things I could say, Noons, but I won't. I'm protecting you here,
Ryan. Your employment is important to you.
Yeah, correct.
Important. Tell me about Michael and Zach.
Yeah.
Obviously, on the outside, we know of their racing resume. We know Michael is a driver and a really successful team owner, and Zach commercially, his story is incredible. I'd love to read and follow what he's done, and of course the McLaren stuff and the involvement with you guys. Races at heart, hardcore races. They're hardcore. All about this place,
yeah,
you know, winning stuff and lots of stuff.
Totally.
What do we not know about those two? What do you see that we don't see?
Well, I think Michael, you see what you get. Like, he is very, very passionate about racing, and he's just a hardcore racer. So he'll send texts or, you know, from during the races, and WhatsApp messages about what's happening here and what's our strategy there. So he's all over it. Like, his following of our team is super close. What the fans don't see is how hard he is watching and riding our team. I think Zach, he's amazing because he's the biggest commercial person in world motorsport. So for someone like me, got to be on the game. And he's a very short one-answer person. So just cut to the chase.
No bullshit.
No fluff, just straight to the chase. And you'll either get cool, yes, or
no.
Explain. So, yeah. You know, he's and that's good. I mean, he's got a lot of people reporting to him, a lot of people in Formula One and challenges he has in various motorsports. So he just cuts through the bullshit and just wants it straight up.
You got a Zach impression?
I don't know, Noons. What I'm thinking is, hey, Zach, if you hear this, I'm only joking, you all right? All right?
Not bad.
I won my trophy, Bruce, so send me the Peter Brock trophy quickly.
Nice. I like it. Well played. Okay, yeah, it's been nice knowing you. You've just been sacked for that.
I'm going to regret that, I can tell.
Now, before I came to do this podcast, I like to talk to my wife about who I'm going to interview.
Oh, my God.
Because she's got a different lens on all of this sort of stuff. And when I said I'm going to talk to Bruce Stewart, she said, is that the guy that said fuck a lot on Inside Line?
Gee whiz.
I said, well, you just picked a bad time to take a glass of water then, didn't you? And I said, darling, yeah, that kind of is. But you know what? I watched that and I enjoy watching all this other programming that we do. And I kind of felt like you turned it up a notch, Brucey. I felt like you just put a bit of extra sauce on this. Now, can you tell the world out there that you went, oh, I knew the camera was on and I wanted to really pound the desk, or no, that was legit. That was I was really pissed and I let it fly.
I think I do say fuck a lot. and my wife pulled me up on it and she said, no, you do let it go a little bit too often.
Was it not appreciated when it was viewed at home on TV?
No, I got pulled up on it, to be fair. And so I've really been trying to stop that. I think I'm a little bit illiterate. I'm also trying to fit into Aussie culture. You know, I'm trying to sound like you guys. Because obviously your descendants are convicts. So, I really got to try and fit in with the lingo. But no, it scared the hell out of me. I saw it and I went, oh my God. Like, yeah, no. And I think also, we were away for a long period of time.
There was plenty going on.
And it was pretty emotional. Yeah. No, there was a lot going on back in Melbourne as well. Melbourne was in lockdown. And thank you, Dan Andrews. Fuck you, Dan. Can you cut that out? Anyway, and then, so you were having calls from home and understanding what they were going through. And then we were having our own challenges on the road. And it was just trying to show emotion. I'm a pretty emotional person. So I think that was my way of, instead of saying very, I was probably using that word. Yeah. But you forgot about the cameras, like that was the good thing. But then sometimes when they showed what the episode was going to be, it was like, oh, man, I didn't know you caught that.
But the key is there. Did you have veto of being able to pull that sort of stuff out if you asked for it to be taken out?
Yeah, they did that, but then we were – well,
it's got to have some warts.
It's got to be just.
It can't be all nicely.
Yeah.
Kumbaya, holding hands, walking down the road. Like that's probably what I'm interested in your take on this. Our sport's guilty of that.
Yes, it is.
But it winds back to what you talked about earlier. It's ingrained in the young drivers of how important it is to thank your mum and dad, thank your sponsors as a carter.
Yeah.
It's so crucial that commercial support, all the deals. If you're a ripping footballer and you can kick six and get 35 touches, doesn't matter what you do, say, whatever, they'll find a way to make sure you're playing next week.
Yeah.
But we've got that thing.
Yes.
And I don't know how we fix it or change it.
It's true.
Because you've got one of the, in Chaz, you've got one of the top skilled drivers, but also one of the great personality drivers of the championship, if not the best personality. So if we can't bust him out and take him and transcend the sport,
yes,
who can we?
Well, plenty of questions there, and I think you're right. Firstly, with Chaz, he should be out there like that, because you're right, he's a beautiful human being but very, very funny person and brings people along with him. So, I'd love to see Australian sports fans outside of motorsport recognise, hey, this guy's pretty cool because he's not trying to be anything he's not. He acknowledges he's an Aussie bogan. and love it.
Celebrates it.
He celebrates it. He celebrates it. Yeah, it's so that's one. Then you're right, too. The sport, we do distill things down a lot and we do consciously worry about how it's perceived. And, you know, we've got to be a bit braver. We've got to allow a few heroes and villains, you know. I think
I feel like no one wants to put the black cap on
because
it kind of goes against the way that they're – I mean, plenty of opportunity. I look at it and see Van Gisbergen as involved in plenty of situations where he could put on proudly wear the black cap.
He could.
Like literally, not just because he's a Kiwi, black cap and all that.
Yeah.
But Grice did it. Ingle did it.
Yes.
He could do it, but he chooses not to.
Yes.
And no one else chooses to wear it to stand out from the crowd because, let's face it, Russell did it as a deliberate decision.
Yes.
And it worked for him.
It did.
It totally worked.
It did. The enforcer and I think you're right. But the hard part is because the commercial backing is so important in motorsport and perception is everything for a lot of brands, for most brands, that – no one has a confidence in the brands that they would be backing them if they could carry off the black cap thing that they would
They'd
do
be
it.
Supported.
They would be supported. Mm. That's the heartland of it.
Mm.
You know, we've seen in all kinds of motorsport drivers who should be in there, and we've got one right now, and a co-driver in our team, Fabian Coulthard, who's not in the main game because he didn't have that commercial support. And when the tide turns against you, you don't have that weight pushing for you to keep you in the game. Mm. I think you're right. I think you're right. I don't know how to solve it, Nunes.
Same. I don't know. It's one thing to identify the things, but it's another thing to then actually.
I like that. I like that in Brody, though. Like,
he's got a bit of that.
He has. And I'm a big fan of Brody. And I said to him after 2020 Bathurst, he was holding up. He got behind Wincup, and Wincup had that moment. And then he was holding up Chaz. And he was on his tail. He was. They were having a ding-dong battle. And I was like, man, fuck, are you shit me, Brody? But, man, I really enjoy watching you drive. And he was, you know, like, wow. You know, it was like, yeah, no, well done. Like, you got in the way, But I kind of like that in him. I like that fight in him. Equally, I do like him that he's one of the sort of – he fits his suit a little bit more snugly than most of the drivers. And you know what? I've got to respect that. He's a bit of middle order batsman about him, although he has fined down a little like Brody, so don't take this to heart. But, yeah, I kind of like how he represents himself.
And you like the engine that's in his car.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hope he does too.
Yeah.
So.
What's been, along the way, your greatest moments? I mean, there's what WAU, WR, HRT.
Yeah.
Clearly Bathurst wins kind of always stand out strongly, but are there other things along the way that maybe aren't the ones we default to that you remember fondly? Might even not have been at a track. It might have been at the workshop or a race win or a result that we all don't really stop and think at.
I think one most recently was the win at Darwin. That was bigger than people probably could understand because we made some pretty silly mistakes and I have to wear the fault for that on Saturday. So in our process and how we were, how we dealt with it as well, you know, in regard to the fan and the event and all of those things. And that ultimately comes under me. So process and programs, it sits with me. And then equally, you know, there was a bit of focus on us on Sunday morning. Garth wanted an interview. I was sort of like, you know, and then it was, you know, well, just – once you had it, then hopefully the thing's a little bit dead. You know, so we spoke pretty frankly and, you know, we're going through that and we were pretty embarrassed, but, you know, we eyes forward on the day, on Sunday. And then for Chaz to win that race.
And like, the way he
won.
He won it when everyone was just waiting for the tyres to disappear.
Oh, mate, like that was like from boiled lollies to chocolates. And let's not kid ourselves, we came back after that and, you know, really reviewed how we operate and what, you know, processes for the grid and for, you know, all kinds of scenarios to make sure that we dotted the I's and crossed the T's because the mistakes we made were not acceptable. And so we looked foolish. But then equally, to win that bloody race, I remember I was running out on the pit lane like a, you know, almost half tears in the eyes, like far out. Like that was cool. So that was amazing. You know, clearly in Bathurst, you know, when you win Bathurst, they're pretty cool, amazing things to win. But, yeah, I the moments that I really cherish are when you can actually sit and look at your team and as in, and you can have a beer together or something like that. And so I remember when we won Bathurst in 2009, Craig Wilson was the MD, and we had a moment that he said, pull down the garage doors. We're just going to have a beer. We'd stop, pack up. Everyone stop. We're going to have a beer together. We're going to put the cup in the middle, the trophy in the middle, and just have that. And I really cherished that. I thought that was bloody hell. And so I was determined that if we won it, we were going to do that. And we did that with Chaz and Leroy's win last year, you know, and the Mobile One Appliances online car. And it was like, righto, everyone,
stop
packing up, pull down the doors. And it was actually, we happened to be behind the TV with Scafey and Jess. And so we were just sitting there having a moment where it was like, everyone, let's just cherish this. And that was pretty cool to sit there and have a beer with a couple of people and just go, wow, you know. And I really love that, because through all the emotion and the how bloody hard it is to actually sit with your mates and just have a moment where you look them in the eye and go, how good is this? I'm rap for you, you're rap for me. And you know, the fans are there as well on the edge of the garage, and we had a couple of them come in and we were all chatting to them and they were elated as well. That's the other moments you go, wow.
It's a moments business.
Oh.
Because you don't get many of them.
No.
So when you get them, whether it's a win or a podium or a big fight back or it's a farewell to someone or a welcome to someone or whatever.
Yeah.
When you get those ones, and I love thank you for sharing that. It's so it's those little inner circle, inner sanctum, locker roomy type things that the cameras don't see, but
you guys are clearly. That was really cool. Really cool.
You just got to make some more.
Hopefully we can do it.
Now, I've got a couple of things that I want to get your little take on.
Okay.
You're a Melbourne-based team.
Yeah.
Sandown's not far away. It's your home track for pretty much anyone that's around these parts.
Yeah.
Sandown 500, can we get it back? We want it back. We need another Enduro.
I love the Sandown. Yeah, I love the Sandown 500, and I'd love another Enduro. I think it would be great. I think getting our co-drivers a bit of race fitness, match fitness before they get to the mountain would be great. So you'd have no argument from me. I think that sounds like a great idea.
You're on board. You're on board.
Absolutely.
Keep going and grabbing more people to get on board with this, because you know, we have such great history, and every now and then we just let it fritter away and we don't grab it and celebrate it and push it up there. And that whole, but the footy's on and all that stuff. Well, half the team in the finals are interstate anyway.
Yes, so exactly.
There's less games in Melbourne generally in that weekend anyway. So.
And there's opportunity. Third weekend in September in Melbourne, Sunday, there's no footy because they have to play on Friday or Saturday.
Mm.
So if you have a big race on Sunday, it's a TV win.
And I reckon we would have 25 co-drivers right now who'd be going, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Yes. Lift my contract rate for next year. I'll do another race. I'll do another race.
Yeah.
Is there any plan or urge or business case for you guys to do more than supercars? I mean, you've done a bit of GT and the Porsche stuff over the journey, and clearly you have, you know, from a vehicle and remanufacturing business, a lot of stuff going on. But in the motorsport stuff, beyond supercars, is there grounds, or is there, because the pie isn't as big as it used to be for supercars teams.
No.
So customer work, running other programs, is that something that would make
sense? We have to. We've got a lot of people in our business and we're working through that right now. So, yes, love to do GT programs, love to do other racing programs. Certainly saw the Walkinshaw Automotive Group did some off-road racing, did Fink. So really,
I think the fillings did fall out of Luffy's teeth after that.
Look, and if anyone would keep smiling, it would be Luffy, because he's a amazing person. But yeah, he did very well. But yes, 100%, we must. And if we don't have other programs under Walkinshaw Racing next year, then I haven't done my role properly.
Mm.
We must have something. New racing programs in other categories, and use our expertise to help other people share success.
Gen 3, things change. Obviously, you're changing brands, but the way it all works changes. What's going to happen with your engine shop? And because previously, you know, you do your own engines, you do Erebus, you supply to other customers. What do you do now with that side of things?
The good thing is we've had a long visibility on it, and so we've been looking and adapting other programs already. So we're doing some stuff with Walkinshaw Automotive Group here. We started doing work with Grove as well. So, and we've started looking and working on old Holden engines and old WR engines.
Which is plenty out there.
Super 2 has to be a category of focus for us, and our engines are really good. So we're well esteemed in that respect. So I know we'll be continuing our engine programs in those areas. But also with what we just spoke about with other categories, I think there are opportunities there as well. So we're going through that right now, working very hard on that.
Is there any of your, you know, you're going to change wholesale brand and era of car next year. Are all the current cars accounted for? Is there anyone that can get a bargain with you to grab one before they go and finish in the leaving Holden, Walkinshaw and Judy United out the door, runaway sale? Is there anything left or are they all accounted for?
Well, we've got one that hasn't been sold yet, and I reckon V8 Sleuth would know which one that is. So, but I'd want to run that in Super 2 next year.
Yep.
Really do. So, and really would love to run two cars. So got a couple of buyers of our cars who would be interested in seeing the cars continue running in Super 2. I think we should be working on program bringing young drivers through. I've really enjoyed what we did with Jaden Ojeda and the team did as well. And it's really good because you upskill your engineers and you give young mechanics opportunities. So it's a really good pathway to get them ready for the main game. So,
love it.
Yep, big plan.
Couple of questions. Our National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions, where fans get to dial in their questions from socials. Did you have a look at those before?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good. That's better.
This is good.
Normally people do the, oh, yeah, I already know what's coming here.
Yeah, but, no, but I don't. So that's really good. Nervous.
That's why
now.
You're sweating bullets right
I
now.
I am.
First question came from Instagram from Ryan Walkinshaw. Who's your favourite out of me, Andretti and Brown?
Okay. There's really clearly no winners in this answer. So thanks for your question, young Ryan. On the proviso that Michael and Zach aren't listening, then, yeah, it's you. But if they are, it's shared between all three. But, yeah, I've certainly known Ryan for longest, and he's got the most against me. So maybe you win, Ryan.
I'm a little worried about this next one.
Okay.
From Instagram, actually, this is Bray Dogg, who I think Brayden is a former WAU mechanic, is with you guys for a long time. He's up at 888 now.
Yeah.
He's wondering if you're still scarred by the vibration that the big bus had in Townsville 2020. Can you elaborate at all on this?
Yeah. So to have, yes, I am, Brayden, and thank you very much for that. We started having competition between different cars going to the track at Townsville, and I drove what was called the big bus. And to be honest, Noons, I'd had a lot of success in leading our team to a lot of victories. So people started, putting a lot of methods to stop our bus. And in fact, they raised the stops under the accelerator. Had zip ties around the drive shaft, so it was sounded like it was rattling the hell. But you know what?
A lot of the old days of those spokey doke things on your push bike.
That was exactly it. And I remember I was leaning out a balcony and I saw Brayden down near the bus. I said, "What are you up to?" And he looked up and he half shit himself. And he said, "Tom and I are going to get an ice cream and all that." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, no worries. Catch you boys later." But little did I know that Brayden had been underneath it, setting me up for the next morning. So, yeah, you'll keep, Brayden.
Troy Turner's question.
Yeah.
How many Gen 3 Mustangs will you build for the start of next season?
Well, for our team, we'll certainly have two and hopefully three.
Have a spare.
Yeah.
Just in case. Shane Sawyer has a question too. Now, he says about the Darwin win being awesome, which we just talked about before.
Yeah.
But the turnaround for getting home was a bit tricky out of Darwin.
Yeah.
Because and if you follow socials, you probably were across this, but a lot of our listeners might not be. But there was a real drama getting back from Darwin.
Yeah.
And he was on the plane.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
I got on your Shane.
So can you fill us in on what happened? Because this was the long – I mean, Darwin to Melbourne's a bit, a little bit
yeah. cool,
but this became such a saga to get your team, other teams, other people in supercars back yeah. from Darwin to Melbourne.
It was. We jumped on a plane. I was lucky enough to be in one of the rows at the front of economy, sat there, put the AirPods in. There'd been a bit of furor on the way. Some person was a bit drunk getting on the plane. Anyway, long story short, an hour and a half into the flight, I sort of woke from a stupor and looked and I thought, geez, we're coming into land. And it looks like Darwin. And I looked across to Kevin from Dunlop and I said, what's going on, mate? And he said, I think we've gone technical. And I was like, crikey. And we flew past Darwin out to sea and I thought, man, we're bloody going in here. And then as the pilot banked, I let go of the seats and tried to look relaxed and thought, no, we're going to be okay. Ends up one of the passengers, this person shouldn't have been left on the flight, was abusing a lot of my team and a couple of our really mild-mannered engineers. Look, if it was Ryan Walkinshaw or myself Oof. Or Andrew Wiles sitting next to this person, I'd kind of understand it. But it was one of our really, lovely engineers who doesn't really say anything to offend anyone. Anyway, we had to ditch that person off the plane and they got clapped off the plane and, the federal...
And they were affected by...
Oh,
alcohol, drugs, who knows.
Yeah, everything, And actually, they got clapped off the plane. They got clapped off the plane by us because we got removed from the plane first. Everyone had to get off and the federal police had to get this person off and that was pretty upsetting. Anyway, in Darwin, it was too late for the plane to take off again, so we had to stay the night in Darwin and had to book everyone accommodation, sort everyone out of food and dinners, et cetera, and then get back on the plane the next day. Noons, we're on the plane, 90% of the people on the plane, a couple of people were outside the plane. I'm like, what's going on? No, we have to evacuate the airport. So everyone had to get off the same plane we'd been on twice, leave the airport and stand in a queue for an hour and a half outside. So by the time we got on the plane the third time, the pilot said, look, we've got about 20 minutes for everyone to get on and for us to take off. Before we run out of time, you're going to stay for another night. So anyway, they did a good job, the team at Virgin, and to get us going here. But frustrating. Was that Shane?
Who wrote
Well, Shane, good on you, mate. Appreciate you writing in and sending that. Hope you got home okay. So all good.
Makes those moments of the win on the weekend.
Yeah,
you got to celebrate them because for those couple of days,
celebrate. Nightmare.
Anyway, you got home.
You got home.
Worked out okay. Trent Erza normally asks food related questions, but he's changed it up this week for our final one.
Wow, you would have thought you would ask me a food related one.
Beef jerky. This will tell a lot about you, your psyche of where you're at. The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Wow. Oh, I'd have to say The Rock. A little bit of a fan on The Rock, So anyway, how does that reflect? What do you think about Stone Cold?
I think
that
means that you like nice things, you've got a raised eyebrow, you're a bit more Miami than Texas.
Okay, got it. The Rock. Good question. No worries.
He always gives us something a bit different.
Nice, I like it.
Just don't know where it's coming from. But, mate, thank you so much for hosting us today. Really appreciate sitting down. A bit of business, a bit of Brucey, a bit of inside line, a bit of this, that and everything. So really appreciate the time and all the best for the rest of the year. Big second half coming up in the Repco Supercars Championship and a big change next year, but I'm sure you'll send off your current era in style.
Thanks. Thank you. And thanks to young Ryan for riding in as well. So great having you here, Noons, and look forward to seeing you at a track.
And there you have it. Bruce Stewart on the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Repco. Great to sit down with Bruce at the Walkinshaw Automotive Group and run through a whole pile of things over the course of that hour or so. I think we covered a lot of ground really across the course of this episode. We can't wait to see how the rest of the championship unfolds for WAU heading towards those big marquee races later in the year, and of course putting the full stop on their chapter racing Commodores, which, well, when you think Walkinshaw and Commodore, it dates all the way back to 1987 when Tom drove a Commodore in the Nürburgring round of the World Touring Car Championship and of course created
Holden Special Vehicles, the Holden Racing Team, and everything that has flown on from there. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the podcast. It was really great to sit down and have a chat. Every Tuesday, Castrol Motorsport News Podcast is back with Andrew and Stefan. Fridays, it's Repco Supercars Weekly. And of course, we've got plenty of stuff every Wednesday in the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Repco, upcoming. Next week, Stefan Bartholomeus in the studio with me to answer your questions. It's a special Q&A episode of the V8 Sleuth Podcast. So we will chat to you again, this time next week.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.